Okay, welcome everybody to this latest episode of Forever Bristol City podcast. We're reporting the day after the afternoon before from the match at Ashton Gate, which finished City 1, Reading 1. Full house of guests with me today. Sat by my side is Neil. Neil Sutton. Tom's just got out of bed, so he's doing it from home. Ian's speaking to us from not Madeira, but sunny Devon somewhere. And Mark, he's over somewhere in the other side of Bristol. And we're down in sunny Clevedon, by the way, where everybody has started to park at right angles to the beach, as it used to be.
It's a protest. There's a protest going on.
We're going to be part of the Clevedon protest after this. Gentlemen, as we normally do, I haven't written any notes for this. It's going to be a little bit off the cuff. As we normally do, from each of you, literally 30 seconds on your thoughts on the game. I'll start with you, Ian. Just a quick summary of yesterday.
I probably agree with most of what Nigel Pearson said after the game, and I normally do. We were very wasteful in the final third. There were three things wrong with our performance yesterday. Our shooting, our crossing, and our shooting and crossing mainly, and I would add the final ball to that.
Yeah. Okay. Tom, your thoughts on yesterday's game?
Frustrated. 2 points dropped, in my opinion. Two quite easy points. I don't think they were a particularly good team, especially not to watch. Carroll was effective at what he does, but apart from that, offered not much. I thought we dominated large parts of the game, but a lapse of concentration cost us 2 points yesterday.
Okay. All right. Mark, your thoughts?
An exercise in self-harm, basically. That's just wasteful, frustrating, slow in the final third, dominated possession against a side with Andy Carroll. I think I'd love to see him see if an articulated lorry could turn faster than him, because I think it could. But he got the assist for the goal, and walk away from that. A game we should have won three times over, we drew.
Yeah. Fair enough. And Neil, your thoughts on that 90 minutes?
Well, from an attacking perspective, it was almost like watching junior football again, under 10s, wasn't it? You know, to you, to me, the Chuckle Brothers up front, really. I mean, the attacking that we had yesterday was, you know, we got in behind, I don't know, a dozen times?
Yeah,
plus,
easily.
Plus,
yeah.
How many shots?
We have 18 shots.
18 shots. I mean, sometimes that's collectively three games or something that together, isn't it?
Eight on target. That's
eight on target.
Yeah, that's probably about four games, isn't it?
Yeah, you had to be brought round with you had to sniff some you know, brought round after that. Eight on target.
I think sometimes we got in behind them and we were like, oh my God, we've got about four options here, and there was this complete panic confusion because we don't normally get in behind teams like that. And we just had an abundance of chances and just composure in front of goal. Some of our shooting, I think most of our shooting was either going towards the corner flag, wasn't it?
Yeah, it wasn't.
Really, I mean, it was hardly as if there was, you know, Lumley pulling a couple of saves, but we never really, you know, it wasn't four, five, six, seven, eight saves by Lumley, was it?
No. I mean, for my part, you know, I thought it's easy to get downhearted about it because it was 2 points drop. I thought there were some very good individual performances, which we'll come on to later. But as a cohesive unit, it was a little bit all over the place. And we had the 68 possession. We know what we're like when we're in possession. Okay, we did have the attacking threats on goal. But, you know, as Ian's just said, we didn't have the final ball. Ian, if you look at the starting lineup, it's threadbare to a point. Although saying that, you know, you look at the players, you know, if you read our front four, Vyman, Conway, Mometi and Wells, most of those would be first picks for any side in the bottom half of the division. But what did you think about the lineup? No surprises there. It's as needs must, really, wasn't it?
Well, yeah, there were, like you say, there were no surprises. We thought after this international break we'd have some players back. We did, but we lost another one. So instead of having seven players out, we had six. And unless we can solve that conundrum of continually having four to six players injured, some with poor long-term injuries, then we need a bigger squad. And that squad needs to be quality. And if you look at the problem, it's easy to see where it is. in the last six games, we're the 20th best team in the league. We've scored six goals. Over the last 10 games, we're the 13th best team in the league, and we've scored seven goals.
Mm.
So that it, you don't have to be Pep Guardiola to see where the problem is. Now, the issue is solving it. We haven't got a natural number nine. I think Conway's the closest. But all of the strikers we've got, you would say they would look better playing next to a proper number nine.
Okay.
That's the issue with us. We've stopped scoring goals.
Yeah. No, and that wasn't a problem at the first part of the season. Tom, you know,
well, I'll give you an example, Dave. After eight games, we were the joint highest scorers in the league. We had 16 goals.
We did. Right?
So we're now 12th in terms of goals scored, and we're scoring 1.18 goals per game. Now, yeah, that is only ever at best going to get you in lower mid table,
which is where we are. Tom, you look at the back four. I mean, Tyner. Tanner, Viner, Pring, De Silva. I thought they did okay, and there were times they were just playing it around, but there was nothing in midfield, and that's not to undermine Omar Taylor-Clark. But, you know, Tanner had one of his best games for the club, I thought, yesterday. What are you on that?
Yeah, completely agree. I thought Tanner was probably the standout player for me on that pitch yesterday. But you look at that team, and we go back to it almost every week, and it's like, where's the creativity? There's no incisive passing. Yet again, we're going down the wings and trying to whip these balls in, and our crossing was awful yesterday. It was just all from everyone on the pitch. The only one I can remember being half decent was a ball from Tanner towards the end of the first half, which got to the pen spot. But Mometi yesterday, for all his, you know, we rave about his creativity and how he's this maverick that can create something out of nothing. But end product wise, yes, we had a few.
Well, there's no end product, Tom, is there? Because there's all this dancing around on the ball, but you don't see the killer ball. He did a couple of what I would call flat, lowest trajectory crosses in the first half yesterday. But I think I might have been Chris Honor said that, you know, not he's flattering to deceive, but, you know, we need to have that end product. And, you know, he needs to start producing, doesn't he? Yes.
Yeah, he needs a goal. It's like, you know, he was unfortunate not to score on his first home game, and then he was unfortunate not to score up at Swansea.
Yeah.
But since then, I can't think, since that Swansea game, I can't think of a chance that he's had, apart from the way he made one yesterday. Sunderland away, where, you know, he's unfortunate, Patterson saves it onto the post. But from that game, I can't think of a chance, and that's over a month ago, that a left winger that we rave about his creativity has had a real chance to score. Yesterday, he had one saved by Lumley, but he does this thing where he goes outside, then inside, then outside, but he takes that extra touch, and it goes either for a corner or he gets tackled.
That's right.
You know, and you just want a bit more.
And he always does try and cut in on his right foot. That's the point I was trying to make. Mm. I had a pinch in a moment there where I was thinking what Chris Honor said. It's getting predictable, and the decent teams will stop that. Mark, you look at, we said about the midfield, and it was lacking in Alex Scott. Matty James came back into the team. Omar Taylor-Clark, he did get substituted. But what did you think of that department of the pitch?
Yeah, no creativity at all. I mean, Omar Taylor-Clark, bless him, 19 years old. He wouldn't get near the team if we didn't have the injuries. You know, he's only ever played at Yate Town on loan, but he did the best he could. But we're just so slow, you know, with the ball going forward. The one move where we did pass quickly, the ball worked and it fell to us in the area, and Tommy Conway scored. But other than that, it was just too slow, far too slow. One and two touch play, and you know, Matty James, there's nobody getting ahead of the ball from midfield. I think I've seen Joe Williams do that a couple of times away from home. I saw Alex Scott do that against West Brom, but we'd never see one of the central midfielders, you know, running ahead of the ball to get on the end of a cross. We tend to get in a line, like some little chain gang in the area, and expect the ball to fall to a forward. Naki Wells looks isolated up front, you know, a small man in a 4-2-3-1. It's just not working. But with Mometi, he would be much better served with Cam Pring there, because Cam Pring's a direct runner, and when he did get the ball, he ran at their defence and he'd got some pace. With De Silva, both of them try to take far too many touches, and it's like he's got him. It's like he's got De Silva on a leash. He just, you know, he just plods, waits for the ball.
No, he does.
He'll bring the ball back inside, and there's just no point. And the crossing, I think our crossing coach must be Johnny Wilkinson, the way we put it in the air.
Well, we had did unbelievable. I hear somebody say we had about 30 plus crosses yesterday?
Well, there's no point. There's nobody with the physicality to get on the end of them, and they go nowhere anyway. You can hit the ball low and hard across the six-yard box. Somebody comes in, it's got to go near post to try and take the ball early before the defender, or play the ball back to the penalty area and get somebody running in. But that final pass, even when we did that, and I think it was typified by Pring's run in the second half when he took the ball from a corner down the right and he played the ball on top of Naki Wells. And oh God, it's shocking. Some of those final passes, considering how we got into the final third so many times behind them, it was a shocking waste.
And that's why it was a frustrating afternoon. Yeah. Neil, I said when I was running through the side with Ian, that front four or offensive players of Vyman, Conway, Mometi, and Wells, we've got all the strikers on the pitch, but and they're all good players in their own individual way. So why isn't it working? I think I know what you're going to say because of the midfield. But, those four, bearing in mind last season, the WSM, not only did they score, they created for each other. So that was a unit.
Yeah, but last year the WSM, they were very different players, weren't they?
Yes. Oh, yeah.
And what we have at the moment, we've got a lot of forward players, but they are all of a similar ilk, aren't they? They play in a very similar way. You know who we missed yesterday, Dave?
Go on.
Sykes. That's who we missed yesterday. The game against Birmingham was the last game, the home game, was the last one I remembered that actually we got behind him down the wings. Yeah. And those runs that he was making in on the penalty spot, the amount of times that we just needed somebody to make that run diagonally into the penalty spot or on the edge of the area for when the ball then up cutbacks or whatever. Remember the goal against Blackpool that Alex Scott scored as well?
Yeah.
Just hanging around on the edge of the area.
Yeah.
There was nobody making those sort of runs into the box yesterday. So the Sykes runs, the Scott goal against Blackpool, those type sort of runs, just intelligent. Like, he's getting down the wing. I'm going to not rush in. I'm going to just take a couple of steps Think about it. The goalkeeper, Lumley, yesterday, there was a few shots at him that he was like punching, half-handling. He's a bit of a Frank Spencer, isn't he, in the box at the best of times.
Yeah.
But yesterday there was an abundance of chances in a way.
No, there was.
We got in behind them so many times that at times we had too many options, and I think the composure was lacking in the crossing.
That's right, because I noticed under Paul Ince they were playing, you could see it, just it was a rigid 5-3-2, and they were big side, cumbersome side.
I thought when King came on, he made a huge difference.
Yeah.
Actually, I thought when King came on in the middle of the park yesterday was really difficult conditions. Obviously, we haven't spoken about the pitch or anything.
No, we will.
and really difficult conditions. But the players that were technically better actually had better games yesterday.
Yeah.
So De Silva, in some ways, technically very good. Tanner was technically very good, read the conditions well. And I thought when King came on for Taylor Clark, we got a little bit more of security in the middle of the park.
Yeah.
That said, completely right what Ian has said about the lack of creativity.
Mm.
But
well, let's talk about that, because again, obviously we talk about the balance of the season. It looks like Scott may well appear for the last two or three games.
3 weeks.
3 weeks.
I've been told.
Out
for 3 weeks.
So he's gonna probably play the last two games of the season.
Can I just say two words?
Yeah, go on.
Oh, bugger.
Yeah, well, there we go. Thank you for that. That was a massive contribution.
And, all right. Yesterday,
yeah,
Matty James did his hamstring.
Right. Matty James did his hamstring.
Yeah, I thought he limped off, didn't I?
All right, Ian, I'm coming to you next, Ian. Let's talk about the balance of the season. But Ian, I want to take us through the goal, yeah, rather than me talk about it. How did you see that goal? Because it was a first half where we did get the ball in the back of the net, but it was ruled out for offside. They missed an absolute sitter. I think it was Mete, yeah, where that was the only chance they had. But we deserved it. Take us through it as you saw it.
Well, it was some quite nice football. We played in Tanner, who crossed it. It hit one of their defenders, came back to Conway, and he smashed it in with his left foot. It was a nice finish. But once again, it was that little bit of luck where the cross hit one of their defenders and it came back to Conway. It could have just as easily come back to one of their players. But on the balance of play, we needed to be in front. But that's how I saw the goal.
Mm. Tom, I thought Conway did well. He was quick with his feet because it came to him from his right. And it was a clinical finish, almost slide rule. He slid it in with his left. I thought he showed good feet. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, he sorted his feet out really quickly. And Conway yesterday, I felt he was playing a bit of a position that's unnatural to him. He was asked to play deeper, almost in like a Scott sort of role, to free up Wells up top. But yeah, it was a good finish. I mean, he said in his post-match interview that he's not even had a 21s game to get his match sharpness back. And I think if you look at it on the whole, it shows how much we sort of need him if we're rushing him back without any, you know.
Sorry to interrupt, but Richard, according to Richard Forrester from the Evening Post, Bristol Live, whatever they're called this week, James came off with cramp.
Yeah.
And according to somebody else at the club, Scott's out for 10 days. But then again, we said that about Naismith and he was out for 10 games. Yeah. So, don't know.
Yeah. Anyway.
Sorry to interrupt.
All right, Tom. So good finish. But, yeah. Although we had all that first half domination, other than Wells' effort that was disallowed, we weren't really testing the keeper, though, Tom, were we?
No, there was. I can think of, you know, had a shot from 25 yards, but we would get into the position. I mean, our heat map yesterday must have just been by the corner flag because we'd get the ball there and we'd look up and we'd see these three big centre backs. You know, you've got Tom Holmes there, you even had Carroll playing centre backs at some points, and you're like, you're looking at it and it's like Wells, Mometi, you know, we're not a particularly big team. We're trying to lump balls in the box and hoping for a drop down. And that's where the goal, you know, sort of came from. It came off one of theirs. And it was the only bit of composure, really, in the game where Conway side foots and doesn't lash at it. And we were lashing at shots yesterday, particularly in the second half. It felt like we got a bit desperate to try and find that goal.
Yeah.
And we were just lashing at things. But yeah, I thought Conway played well yesterday and I thought he made a difference.
Yeah. Yeah, Mark Conway, good to see him back. 10th goal of the season. You one could argue if he adds two or three more to that between now and the end of the season, he's another one coming off the academy production line. And if he maintains it at the start of next season, he could be another one that's going to sell for a few million quid, would you think? And he's Scottish international to boot as well, or under 21 or whatever it is, yeah?
Yeah, I think he's a breakout star this season. And it was a shame he did his hamstring against Swansea back in January, because I think he would have scored a few more goals. He's always looking for the next pass, always on the move. He hits the target more often than not. Always want to take a shot. And yesterday it was a result of a 1-2. Came back off the Reading player, but he hit the ball through his laces, right into the corner, right on half time. We were where we deserved to be, and I think his race was probably run after an hour, because he hadn't played an under 21 game, so it was probably down to stamina. But I think he'd be better in a two or a front three, well, really.
And you're not the first person that said
because
that
he's so effective. But yeah, God knows what the team's going to be against Stoke if we're missing, you know, Scott. Naismith won't be ready, and James.
Well, we're playing Friday, Monday as well. So, you know, but I mean, Neil, Reading, yeah, that was their first point away from home this year. They haven't won a game in five, right? It seems as though he's got them well organised, Paul Ince, whose managerial career thus far hasn't matched his playing career. But what did you think of them yesterday?
They had a lot of injuries. And I think they had one game plan, and that was the set piece. I mean, literally every time they got a throw-in, or a free kick, or even a goalkeeper had the ball, all you needed to do was look where Andy Carroll was.
Yeah.
And you knew where the ball was going to be kicked to every single time. There was, I mean, their equaliser, I know we'll get to it and I won't describe it, but it was the one time when there were effectively two of their players blocked out our players and isolated Carroll. Yeah. And that was the one time we switched off, really. But other than that, I thought we played him quite well. I mean, the Andy Carroll of old, he was a player, wasn't he? When he was at Newcastle,
we got a 2-2 draw against Newcastle. Yeah. The year he took, he was
and at West. Top he played us the West Ham home game.
That's right.
In the cup, and he, you know, he was a great player.
Well, he made Chris Martin look quick, didn't he?
His legs have gone, haven't they? I mean, it's great. It's almost like when Wayne Rooney played down there, you know, and for Derby when he was playing manager at Derby. And you thought, there's a player, but
there was a player there once.
There was a player there once, but you know, with Carroll, and you thought, in his prime, he must have been some player. But
yeah,
they had one game, but there's no way. Paul Ince after the game went, you know, we were always in the ascendancy. Oh yeah, we're also. You're thinking,
you've listened to that 4-minute interview. Then,
I haven't. I've seen it.
Oh right,
but to me. A bit of humility from Insta saying on another day that could have been 3-4.
He didn't say that. Well, they're not going to, are they?
He just went, oh, yeah, no, we deserve that point and all the rest of it. And you're like, right, okay, mate, yeah, true.
So into the second half again, you know, you always feel at 1-0, it's potentially not going to stay that way. You hope to get the second goal. But Ian, coming to you, the goal. I thought Carroll played okay yesterday. Every little flicked header, it seemed meaningful and with purpose. But some people have been pointing a finger at Max O'Leary, saying he should have done better. But what was your take on the goal, the equaliser? Well,
we were in trouble from the point we didn't mark Carroll from the set piece.
Yeah,
and as Neil quite rightly said, every long ball, every free kick was aimed at Andy Carroll, so it wasn't difficult to predict. So they hit. We give away a stupid free kick. I think it was Vyman, King, and could have been Jada Silva trying to play tight, neat little passes in about a 2-yard space. They came away with the ball. Mometi's given away the free kick. He was very lucky, Mometi, not to go off for a second yellow in the second half when he pulled that lad back and he'd already been booked. Mm. So they put the free kick in. No one stood on Carroll. I don't know if he even jumped, but he hit the ball hard in the middle of his forehead, fired it towards goal. O'Leary could have stayed on his line and not come to try and get to the ball, in which case he may have tipped Zhao's header over the ball. But when the ball comes in like that and you've got a very small defence and you're the final line of defence, then you tend to throw yourself at it a little bit. So I'm not going to criticise Max too heavily for that, but because the problem wasn't caused by him, it was caused by not effectively. And when I say marking Carroll, I don't mean out jumping him, because we didn't have anybody capable of that, not unless Naki Wells stood on Jada Silva's shoulders. But and even then, they'd put the two of them together, they'd have probably been a little bit shorter than Carroll. But once he'd middled that header and put it towards goal, we were in trouble. And Joe's a decent player. Joe's the sort of player that he is a 9 who can take the ball with his back to goal. And he's a bit of a. I didn't think he was very good yesterday, but I have seen him cause us huge problems over.
Well, he played for Sheffield Wednesday once, I think, and I'm sure he scored a couple against us.
He's a good player, but he earns a fortune. I don't know if he's still earning that same fortune. I think he is, because when they bought him from Sheffield Wednesday, he signed a long-term deal. And that's one of the reasons, I think it's in 2 weeks' time, they get a 6-point deduction, which will, at the moment, from where they are...
They're 7 points above the drop at the moment, Reading.
Well, it will put them 1 point above the drop.
Yeah. And look at what Neil Warnock's doing at Huddersfield. Tom, the goal that we conceded, the equaliser... you know, again, it was a deft header by Carroll. And would you say I think Ian was heading that way, and if we had developed the conversation, said he cost too much money. But would you say Lucas Jarre is that conventional number nine that we could do with?
I personally wouldn't want Lucas Jarre due to his injury record. The man is a fantastic player, but he's always injured. I mean, you speak to Redden fans, and I'm good friends with the Redden fan, and he speaks about Lucas Jarre, and he's just like, cost them £8 million. Cost them £8 million, Lucas Jarre from Sheffield Wednesday. And he's on big money there. And it's a striker's finish for sure. But for me, I don't think Jarre would fit the way we play either. But saying that, we missed Atkinson or Kalas yesterday. Someone that is a dominant header of the ball. Mm. Someone that's got a good leap and a powerful, you know, particularly Kalas, almost like this double jump where the ball comes over and you see Kalas up for everyone and he's, you know, running through.
Well, and Baker.
Just to you know, minimise Carroll's effect. Thought Mite particularly first half was good for them, but Carroll was, everything was flicking off him. And the goal comes from Tom Holmes blocking Pring and King. And then, you know, Pring tries to get out to Carroll in time and it's like Maxing sort of half comes because he doesn't, I think Max lost his bearings a little bit there of where the ball was and how close they were in, because he storms out to the 6-yard box, then stands there. He doesn't even really fully commit. He doesn't put his hands up. He doesn't attempt to punch it or get anything on it. He just stands there, and Jarre realises that, as good strikers do, and just flicks over.
Mm. Yeah. So, do you think there's a player lurking in League One or League Two in the mould that, you know, a Jarre is, or do you think, you know, that somebody like that isn't really the answer?
Well, I'd rather have Yakob Mate, to be quite honest. I thought he looked much better than Jarre. 27 years old. I don't know if he cost a few million. Probably one of the other players who's draining their finances and sending them into induction. I think he looked a better player. He turned Viner inside out in the first half and played it across the box. But obviously, you know, he got a lot of inconsistency. Just going back to the goal, the ball's actually played to the corner of the 18-yard box, the left corner. That's where Carroll heads it from.
Yes, he does.
So he actually heads it back into the middle. Now, there's no way they should really score for there. I mean, it's ridiculous. And of course, he gets between Tanner and, I think, Viner. And maybe, you know, Max is a little bit too quick off his line. But Carroll's header from the left hand corner of the 18-yard box, it's ridiculous to be able to. He's headed the ball from there, 10 yards back into the middle for that header. That's the stupidity of the goal. But going back to having a striker, we need it. You need two players for every position. So somebody from the academy, I don't know if we got, I don't know if Palmer Holden or Francois is a type of player. I don't know if they're physically enough to be able to play a number nine role to cover, but we definitely need to bring somebody in. And I mean, we're desperate. We've going back to the goals we scored. We have scored 30 goals in 31 games. That's how bad we are
since that opening flurry. You're saying, yeah,
yeah.
That's what it is. Okay, Neil. There's no this goalkeeper that we had who's gone hiking. You know, you'd have thought, had he not gone, if he'd have bided his time a bit, he would have been given a run of games in the side, because there have been a few question marks over Max. And, you know, I don't think any of us have overtly criticised Max right now. But is Max going to be the number one next season? You know, because where's Badgick at the minute? Is he on loans?
Yeah, he's gone back to Valencia or whatever like that.
No, but Haken's gone somewhere, but where's Badgick? No.
Valencia.
Oh, he's
yeah, in France, isn't he?
Right.
Yeah. For me, Max is basically where we are as a club. We've given him another 3-year contract because he's all right. He's solid enough. He's a solid enough championship keeper. But there are times when you see, you know, he's never going to be a top class championship keeper. They had one chance yesterday, and I agree with Tom to the extent that it's not the first time where he comes, but he doesn't come. Do you remember that?
Kalas' first game back as well, though.
Yeah, the West Brom game, Asante.
Yes, similar goal position, wasn't it?
Well, just
off the boot.
Well, I mean, he chipped it, but he comes, he doesn't come. He doesn't really command his area. He's a good goalkeeper, but we need better. If we're gonna get into the playoffs or top 10, and we serve as a sign, that is the type of thing yesterday where they have one chance, and that's where you think really decent goalkeeper yesterday. The ball's coming in. He stays on his line. He gives himself a chance. You don't take four or five steps out. Get yourself in no man's land. What are you hoping to achieve there? You're not covering the goal. Anything looping off the header, you're in a bad position. But he comes, and then he just gets caught. He doesn't read it particularly well yesterday. And at that time, you just look at it and you think, yeah, I like Max. I understand why we've given him a new contract, but he's a backup keeper. He's not.
And he's got to play every game because whilst Richard's on the bench, that's just having a keeper on the bench.
There's a keeper coming next year, isn't there? Because we're not going to go through a season with whilst Richard's as
unless
backup.
Badgick steps up to the plate.
Oh yeah, unless Badgick. Yeah. But that's got a feeling of something. That's got a Massengo type feel to it, hasn't it? It hasn't worked out, and we just
talking about that with the French. Is Khalifa Cissé still at the club?
I believe so.
Ian, is Cissé still there?
I've no idea. I think you're being unkind to O'Leary as well.
Oh, I'm not.
Well, I'm not saying that he's a bad keeper. I'm just saying he's an average Championship keeper. And the difference is when you're not scoring goals. You know, the keeper makes a difference yesterday. I'm not saying he's entirely culpable because there was a number of things. Letting Carroll have the free header at the back post, that's poor. We switched off. That's what Pearson alluded to in his interview. Not winning, letting Jao jump above two or three of our players and, you know, 10 yards out, that's another thing. Collectively, as a team, we didn't defend that goal in any shape or form particularly well.
No, we didn't. But
O'Leary came, well, he stopped, on. He found himself in no man's land. If you have one chance in the game and you do nothing throughout the rest of the game and there is one opportunity where you need to do things right, it's unfortunate the goalkeepers are the most, you know, if they make a mistake, invariably...
It's a goal.
It's a goal. Whereas anywhere else on the pitch, you make a mistake and generally, you know, you can get away with it. If the keepers, you know, you have one shot, they have one shot on target, the second half, and that's the goal. So they have nothing to do. So they do. You do look at them, and you do think, okay, what could you have done better? And if there was a goalkeeper, you know, Pat Mountain turned around to him, and they showed that you've come, but you put yourself in no man's land there. You've neither come for the ball on trying to punch it out, and he gets ahead of you, right? Okay, but he came, but he didn't make it, or you stay on your line, but he didn't do either. He didn't come, and he didn't stay on his line.
Okay.
Yeah, but I think...
All right, Ian, go on, what were you going to say?
Well, if you put all the goalkeepers in this division in a bag, shook all the names up and handed them out to different clubs, I don't think it would make 3 points difference over a season. You know, I look at their goalkeeper yesterday. Would you rather have him than O'Leary? I wouldn't.
No, that's Lumley. He's complete.
Yeah, but they're all the... I mean, I've looked... I mean, unless you had somebody like... I mean, as soon as Burnley came down, they had to sell Nick Pope, right? So if you had somebody like Pope, yeah, he might make a difference over it. But I think with Championship goalkeepers, I look at it some in the Premier League and I look at them some weeks. I think, I mean, do you think the guy at Leeds, Melier, is that great?
I've seen down the gate this year at least half a dozen better keepers than Max. I'm sorry, but I have.
There you go.
Your opinion, yeah. All right.
It is all about opinions. Closing stages of the game, Ian. I'll stick with you. We had a King header. It was end to end stuff, wasn't it? It could have gone any way. We had King's looping header onto the bar, and Harry Cornick. All right. Well, two things there. Cornick had a chance right at the very end that would have been a worldie, very much like that chance that he had in his very first game. So. When he came on, he had a one-on-one in his very first game.
How is that half volley, that volley at the end, anything like where he's run through about 30 yards?
All right, okay.
I'm not quite sure you could draw the parallels.
Shut up. Right, okay. I mean, we almost snatched it at the end, Ian. What did you think of Connick's, Cornick, sorry, Cornick, not Connick, not Cornick. The singer, Cornick's He got 30 minutes, and a lot of people have been saying on the forum that was probably one of his better games, which is against a low bar. But that chance and his performance, what do you think?
Well, the shot was a yard off target. At least he kept it down. It was a bouncing ball. It was nothing like the one where he went through one-on-one. I don't think he added anything when he came on. That's why I looked for substitutes to do. I mean, Andy King hit the bar with a header late on, or I think the keeper might have touched it onto the bar. I couldn't quite see. And I haven't watched watched any of the highlights back on YouTube yet. But I don't think the way that we go, I mean, Mometi nearly gave the game away in the end by this continually cutting in on his right foot and trying to have a shot. And he got tackled on the edge of the box and they broke. And it was only the fact that the ball got stuck under Joe's feet.
Yes.
It stopped him galloping through, and they could have won the game. So, because we were all up the field trying to get this goal. And I applaud that attacking intent. But I think with our final ball and our crossing, Mark's stat highlights it perfectly. And I noticed it because when I do a match review and ratings, and you look at the negative aspects of our game, I always start off with the positives. The negative aspects of our game, and they are identical most weeks. I was glad to see us change our set pieces slightly and start putting the ball in lower, although as the game wore on, lower became knee height. So, and they weren't hit hard, and they weren't hit early enough. And Mometi doesn't cross early with either foot. He's continually coming on his right, and he'll never ever see more of the ball in a game of football than he did yesterday. He must have been fed up with getting the ball.
And do you know what, Ian? That I'd been saying in a lot of the games that Mometi has been in so far that we need to give him more of the ball. But you've just answered it. He had a lot of the ball yesterday, hell of a lot of the ball, and it was always come on. It just didn't happen for him, did it?
This is the overwhelming emotion. Isn't anger or anything like that. It's a nuisance. It's just pure frustration that we dropped 2 points in a game that we dominated and should have won. And we did well. I mean, our defence did well against very physical. I mean, when I looked at the lineups, when the players were on the field, if someone didn't know anything about City, if someone would have said, well, Bristol City, that's their under-18s, and that's Reading's men's team, you'd have gone, well, that looks about right, because our lot are pretty small, aren't they? Now, how many players did we have on the field yesterday? We're over 6 foot, two?
Yeah, probably. Yeah.
Viner and Pring?
Yeah.
I don't think anybody else is over 6 foot.
I think it's Zach.
Viner and Pring, that's Zach.
James.
Oh, sorry.
All right.
So when you look at, I was concerned that if they could, I thought if they were going to get a goal, I said this a week before the game, if they were going to get a goal, that it would be from a set piece, and it would be because of their power and height. I mean, they must have been 4 or 5 inches taller than us on average.
Yeah. Oh, definitely.
But that really didn't come into the game. As much, and that's a credit to our team. And you know, I'm not blaming Nigel Pearson. If we haven't got tall players, we haven't got tall players. You can't pick them.
As he would say, it is what it is.
Mark's point, who's at the club at the moment, who we could bring in as a nine, Seb Palmer Holden and Josh Average just got recalled from Yeovil because they couldn't get in Yeovil's team. So I can't see them, you know, tearing up trees for our first team if they can't get in that side.
No.
I think the thing with Yeovil, I was talking to some people before about the Yeovil thing. They've been taken over by sort of almost like an agent, and they've got about 12 players on loan, and they can only play 5 players on loan in their first team squad.
All
so
right.
They've gone there and they played, but this you know, scout guy who's down there is basically bringing in so many players, and Mark Cooper is just like, oh God, you know, who are we bringing in this week? And he's just bringing player after player after player. And then that's why they can't actually they couldn't get a game because the amount of loan players that they've got down there, and that's why they've been recalled.
So how did you overget on yesterday, by the way?
Well, they were losing 2-0 to Southend.
Oh, Christ. So they're in a bit of doo-doo.
They're in a real mess.
Sounds like they've got a director of football there. They're shoving players here.
I think they've just taken Kevin Bond. Can we
hear from Tom and Mark? Because I'm conscious it's turning into a conversation between you and Neil.
I beg your pardon.
I'm responding to your Yeovil thing.
Ah, right. Okay. All right.
Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah. Yes. Tom, yes. President Neil is in the Yeovil office.
Mark, shut up. Tom. Tom. What did you think of Cornick yesterday?
It was one of his better games. I thought. I don't think he did much wrong yesterday. The thing with Cornick is, you know, there was some fans yesterday that there was just these you know, boos, particularly from somewhat in the corner, and you're like, really? Like, that annoyed me. It was a minority, but you don't want to see that. I mean, that's a new player that's coming in January, and he looks out of place at the minute, but next season is what I'll judge him on, and I think what everyone should judge him on, because, you know, it's a bit difficult to see where he fits into that team. You know, we're sort of trying to shoehorn him in at right wing, and it's like, okay, we've tried him down the middle, that's not really worked. But yesterday I thought he held the ball up better than he has in previous games. Didn't lose it much.
Yeah.
And he took an optimistic shot at the end, but he just needs a goal. He really just needs a goal. Just something where, you know.
I think he needs a composed midfield something behind him, because we're in this habit of having, you know, if we put forwards on the pitch, we're going to score. Yeah, and it doesn't work like that, does it?
No. What I would say is we haven't seen him with, you know, it's clear that he'll have some link with Cal Naismith and he'll have an understanding. I don't think he's got much of an understanding with the rest of his team. Mm. If Cal Naismith comes in that team, they're going to have that understanding of how each other play from Luton. Mm. And then we might see a bit more of the better Cornick. But at the minute, it's a bit like he does these runs and he does these early runs and preemptive. He's offside quite a bit. But he really preempts runs, and then he's not getting played, and then he's offside, and then everyone's going, oh, Cornick, he's not impacting the game.
Yeah.
But like, he's not making the runs, is that he's mistiming them. But with Cal Naismith on the pitch, he knows how Cornick will play. And I think, you know, we can be a bit more.
Well, we might see that before the end of the season. We might see that before the end of the season. Mark. Mark, what do you think of the referee yesterday? He did a couple of bizarre stopping the game from flowing. I recall once when Nigel was sort of beating the ground in frustration and he booked a few, didn't he? People were saying we're lightweight, but we picked up bookings, but they're for nearly little fouls. But what did you think of him overall? We've seen worse, haven't we? But it won't.
Yeah, it's quite strange. I mean, the referees have raised the bar this season in terms of the amount of physicality before he booked players or give free kicks. Some referees will let things go. This referee didn't. You know, was overtly fussy, and I think, you know, we had a chance of a break. It was a foul in our half, and we could have, you know, we got the ball away early, and he dragged the play back. But there were lots of fouls, niggly fouls in transition yesterday. We got free bookings. I think Omar Taylor-Clark, the physicality of the game was a bit, you know, overcame him a little bit. I mean, he worked his backside off, but that's the best you can expect from a player with his little experience. But yeah, this referee was prepared to challenge everything. But I mean, just think we could have conceded a goal from poor officiating on the line when that ball was Mate with, I think it was clearly offside in the first half by about two yards. You know, begs, you know, think what could have happened if he'd have scored from that. But yeah, fussy refereeing yesterday, lots of breaks, and I don't know if we're going to talk about the pitch, but that's the worst I've seen.
Well, we are. I'm going to come this on season. To that. And I'll awful. Stick with you on the pitch then, Mark, since you've
me on the pitch, yeah.
Yeah, go on then. I thought it looked very. The grass seemed long, and obviously it had been played on the night before. But it was problematic, wasn't it?
We never seem to have a problem in it with a Deso pitch. You know, it wears very well. I think we were a bit shocked. Man City fans were complaining about the state of the pitch, weren't they, after the Cup game? and we're usually very proud of our pitch. You know, obviously it's got to do with the amount of rain that we had on it. And of course, rugby, because of the breakdown in play, scrums, rucks and mauls, is going to tear it up in places. It won't tear up like, you know, like a standard football pitch, because it's got that mix of plastic as a 3D pitch. So it's much truer. But that's, yeah, I mean, I think it's just showing the signs of age, really, and that's the worst I've seen it. I think we've been served very well by it, and we take it for granted that it's going to be looking fantastic, like a billiard table, a green baize table. But it's just showing signs of age. I don't know. Anybody know? Have got any comments on pitch technology? Can they repair it?
What did you think?
Can it be relayed? What happens? How
do
they
do it?
What
did you think of the pitch, Neil?
Well, the
grass seemed long.
There was some rather bizarre markings in the middle third, weren't there? They're sort of like cross markings that I didn't.
They used a different colour ink. They'd run out of green.
No. There were like crosses in the middle and sort of worn parts. It was almost like someone had dropped a load of containers on it overnight and then picked
perhaps
it up.
Perhaps they're conducting satanic rituals there.
Well, I don't know. I think it was unfortunate the game before, a lot of rain, and then Saturday morning there's some more rain and all the rest of it. But it's not conducive to our pace and our counter-attacking type style, really, the carrying of the ball. I mean, it helped us out a few times, like somebody mentioned about the ball getting stuck underneath Zhao on that breakaway at the end. But I think with it, there was a number of players, particularly in the first half, that were losing their footing and sliding around a little bit. I mean, God knows what would have happened if it started raining. If it had started raining yesterday on that pitch, it would have turned into a complete 20-yard...
Remember the pitches back in the 70s, the baseball ground in particular?
Yeah.
Goodness me.
So, no, I think we weren't used to it, but okay. It's the same for both sides.
Collective question to you all. Have we all bought our season tickets for 23-24?
Not yet, but I'm going to. Right. I think Ian said the deadline, the window closes for season ticket holders. Ian, did you say the 2nd of May?
Yeah, the 2nd of May is the last date you can renew on, so I'll be doing mine on about the 16th of April.
Oh, there you go. Very precise.
And if I didn't go, I wouldn't be able to be entertained by Ian and Peter in the coffee shop. So, I've just thanked my lucky stars that I've got friends like that. So, get me out of the house.
Have you bought yours yet?
I have. We're in E32. I have to say, as I'm getting older, obviously
not as old.
You're only 32.
No,
E32.
Sorry.
God, how old would that make me when I had Tom? It'd be like Hartcliffe special, wouldn't it?
Tom, have you saved up your pocket money? Have you saved up your pocket money, or was your dad quite generous in that respect?
Those cars won't clean themselves, Tom.
All right. The reason why I ask about season ticket, because I was inspired to buy mine this week, also because I was on a 3% cash.
Did you bang your head?
No, I was inspired because we may be bang average at football, but when it comes to sustainability, we're number 2 out of 72 clubs in the EFL. Ian, I mean, does that make you feel proud that we're number 2 behind the Forest Green Rovers for sustainability?
Well, it's not something... I'd rather we were number 2 than number 75. I'd be a lot prouder if we were top of the championship. I've got to be honest, and I think that's... But I quite like the fact that sustainability is coming through, because it's something that the world needs. If the entire UK sank into the sea tomorrow, it would make 2% difference globally. So the world needs to do a great deal more. But before we solve that problem, we need to solve the problem of poverty, because if someone's starving, they're not going to worry about emissions. So, and until we get our friends in India and China and USA are doing better than they were, until we get them on board and hopefully got a government in Brazil that's not cutting down the rainforest. But no, I mean, yeah, is it a good thing? Yeah. Is it something to be proud of? Yeah, I suppose it is. It's okay. Up there, isn't it?
Okay, that's me being the cynical.
That's very well said, Ian.
I am. Nice one. The cynical bugger that I am. Tom, you know, you're the youngest of our tribe. You know, is things like the environment and its relationship to football, you know, I mean, do you sort of think, oh, I'll cycle to Ashton Gate next time so I don't put any, I'm not using as much carbon or whatever? Probably not, actually.
No, not from Cleveland, unfortunately. That's a rather long bike ride. It did make me laugh at half-time, Mr. As Downsy puts up the pledge ball stats. I'm not sure if everyone else saw it. But we have
What is that?
I'm not quite sure. I think it's, you know, a pledge to save carbon emissions. But it's clear that we're really going for this, look how great we are, sustainable thing, you know, after getting this place ranking. So we put it up and we've got 135,000, whatever, and they've got zero. And it's like down to going, come on, Reading fans, come on. And it's like, oh, okay. Like, what is this call to save the planet from Downsy? But I mean,
luckily we can't hear or see the Downsy in the dolmen because the PA doesn't work. So I mean, that's something. Or being sustainable, perhaps they could fix the PA system in the dolmen.
Well, they could. I mean, they could.
Downsy yesterday, he announced 20,000, but I've seen everywhere else that it's 22.
The club saying 22 in the BBC site, 25-26, which is what he announced, I think.
It didn't look.
There was
like
never 22. No way was the 22,000 people in the ground. Like even
did you see the gaps in the south stand? I mean, I've just been looking at the highlights when Zach Viner's complaining about the offside in the first half. It pans back, and you're thinking, look at all those gaps. You know, people were staying away, probably. You know, by the faults of heavy rain that didn't arrive, and that, you know, you can stay.
And there's Easter holidays as well, so most people were probably stuck in Bristol Airport, or there
must have been about 18 now, I reckon, with the gaps.
Mm.
But I mean, it's a nice thing going on sustainability. It's a nice thing, but I mean, a lot of these things, you look like these carbon pledges. It's carbon swapping. You know, if we do this, somebody else will do this. It's like on a promise. You know, carbon saving when it never happens.
You could actually cycle in from Downend, couldn't you?
Yeah, I could do. I mean, I think it's a nice thing, perhaps, to aim towards the younger fans, and we're getting
and
more,
Ian,
more families in there.
You shouldn't be pissing off to Madeira every 5 minutes, should you? You know, because you know, going.
Well, he does row there, David. So he doesn't. He does row there. It takes him 10 days. He only spends one day there, and he's got to come back again. That's right, isn't it, Ian?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of it. When I see people who are very well up on these things, like, shall I say, Meghan and Harry, and they take a private jet to go somewhere, at least I'm flying with 650 other people when I go.
Yeah. And your take on the environmental bit, Neil, you sort of...
Yeah. I just saw the sustainability, and I just thought, God, financial sustainability. Well, that's a new one, given how much money we lose.
Yeah, no, that's very true.
I thank Mr. Lansdowne personally and his family because he's made Ashton Gate such a pleasant place to go that we can all be miserable in comfort.
Hmm. That is true. That is true. Okay, look, looking forward, it's Easter, traditionally a time for when promotion relegation issues get... sorted out. There's been a few over the years. I always remember 74-75 season. The year before we went up, we played Southampton on a good Friday, Norwich on the Saturday.
With Ted McDougall.
Ted McDougall. And I went to Southampton and we won. And we thought maybe we were going to do it that year. And later on that season was when the floodlights packed in at Leighton Orient as well. I was there for that one as well. But look, two games over Easter, but it's spread out now. In fact, it's Good Friday and Easter Monday. Obviously, we'll do a review of Stoke. So let's talk about Stoke. They were convincing 4-0 winners at Coventry City yesterday. And Ian, Stoke, you know, if we're going to have any, we're 5 points adrift of the top half now. It was only about 4 weeks ago we were saying we're 5 or 6 points adrift of the bloody playoffs. If we're going to get into that top half of the table, then at the very least, we want to get something up at Stoke's ground on Good Friday. I mean, what are your predictions for Stoke? I guess it depends who's fit again, doesn't it?
I think we'll be very lucky not to get away with a boning. If you look at Stoke over the last 10 games, they've won 5, drew 3, lost 2. They've scored 19 goals and conceded only 7. So on current form, they should blooter us.
That's
so a new word. I hope it's a Scottish word. If they can go up, if we can go up there and get a point, I'd be absolutely delighted. I don't think we will, because I don't think we'll have Naismith, Scott, or Callas back for that. I mean, we don't.
And we might not have James either, might we? Yeah.
Well, if he came off with cramp, I can't see why we wouldn't have him. But no. I think, for example, I think James and King will start. I don't think it'll be Taylor Clark again. I don't. The three I said I don't think will be back. I think possibly two of them, Scott and Callas, Scott and Naismith, will be in for the Borough game. That would be a more likely scenario, and hopefully we won't have any more out by then.
Mm.
But I think it's going to be a very difficult game for us on our current form. I hope I'm wrong. I hope we go up there and win 3-0. Right.
Okay.
I can't see us getting anything, Dave, now.
No, okay. Loud Lisa said on the text that we're 20th in the form table, so she's expecting a defeat. Tom, what do you think? I mean, we've had some good results up at Stoke in recent years, but under that horrible little man, well, he's probably quite a nice bloke, actually, but Alex Neil.
I think you called it right.
All right, thank you. Tom, you like Ian, expecting nothing. It's not going to be a good Friday.
No, it's not going to be a good Friday. It's going to be quite a depressing Friday, I expect. I mean, they're a team in form, and we can't put the ball in the back of the net at the minute. I think defensively we've been more solid, but that's the real test, isn't it? They've got, I think it shows the ambition of the two different clubs coming into the wind down of the season. They're going hard for playoffs, and we're just sort of lumbering over the line a little bit.
Yeah, because if you look, there's about four or five clubs now that are within 4 points of that sixth position, isn't there?
They've got to make up. I think it's a 10-point gap, but you would say they've got to play a lot of the teams in and around the playoffs, and you know they've really picked up their form. They're 5 unbeaten now. I think it's 4 wins, 1 draw in the last 5 games, or something bizarre like that. 3 wins, 2 draws, but they're really going for it, and we're just sort of...
They've got a long way. I'm just looking at the league table now, Tom. They've got a long way to go. They're 10 points off Blackburn, and they've played a game more.
Yeah, but you would say anything could happen, couldn't you? I mean, they've really kicked on, you'd say, and there's a team wanting to finish the season in a positive manner.
Which is what we were saying. Yeah. Which is what we were saying only a few weeks ago. Mark, I did a little analysis yesterday, and I looked at the last 8 games of the last 7 seasons that we've been in the Championship, and we've averaged at 7.4. If you look at that 7 seasons, only 2 of them have we managed more than 1.5 a game. Funnily enough, one of them was last season, and one of them was, I think, the season Lee Johnson second in charge. First complete season in charge. But, you know, we don't, as a rule, finish the season well. And if you make that 7.5 a generous 8, we got one of those points yesterday. We're edging forward to 56 points, which is one better than last season. And somebody, I posted, you know, that's progress, and obviously being sarcastic, but you know, Stoke, that's going to be a tough one up there, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, I don't. I mean, they've done well with teams who above them. They got, you know, they drew with Norwich. They drew away at Middlesbrough, beat Blackburn, hammered Sunderland 5-1, beaten Coventry 4-0. Too far away to get in the playoffs, I think. But you know, really looking to build for next season under Alex Neil, of course, who left Sunderland at the beginning of the season. Because you know the grass we thought was probably greener, but I can't see us getting anything there, despite a win there in the last 4 trips.
Is it 4 in a row?
Yeah, four in a row. I think we won there, but we had that miss it cross, didn't we, from Jay De Silva last year that flew in the side of the net. looked spectacular, and I know we laughed when it went in. But on Good Friday as well, I think it was.
And then was that one, that first of that quartet? Am I right in thinking it was the one when I was on holiday. It was a game I missed, actually. And Benneke Fobi scored at the start of 2019 season.
I think so. But, I mean, I can't see us getting anything against Middlesbrough. They're in form as well. They're going for promotion. The challenge, they're about 6 points off of Sheffield United. Nice sad pass, 5 kickoff, because it's going to be on live on Sky. I think, funny enough, like the Sheffield United game was last bank holiday Monday, Easter Monday. So I think it's going to be, you know,
Not a happy Easter.
This season, well, David.
Look at Middlesbrough yesterday, though. You know, they went to Huddersfield.
I think that was.
And that's Neil Warnock.
That's Neil Warnock. But I think that this season, at the end of January, at the end of February, I was looking confidently at the 4 away fixtures and thinking we could win at least a couple of those. We got 1 point and no goals in 4 away fixtures. I thought this was going to be basically the Alex Scott goodbye tour, you know, because we're resigned to losing him. He's not even playing at the moment. We haven't got many players available. We're scratching around for defenders, people playing out of position, and we're playing in-form teams, and we're going to just scrape enough points to probably be 3 to 6 points above the relegation zone.
Well,
and it's a very sorry way to end the season.
It is. And, it'll be interesting to see how many people do go out and buy their season tickets.
I wouldn't be inspired. No.
We still haven't gone through the magic 50. Yeah, and it's feasible. But if you look down as far as Reading, I mean, you've got two teams on 48 and two on 49. You know, it's not impossible that we could actually slip down the table, because we're 5 points behind Sunderland in 12th, and they got a better goal difference. So we've gone from a month ago saying, oh, might get to the playoffs, to top 10, top half. Now it's slipping down. I mean, If we were to finish with less points and lower league position, when do the excuses stop of, oh, we're going through transition and what have you? Because this is a massive summer for Pearson, yeah, because he is going to have the Scott money, yeah? So we've got to get our shit together, basically, haven't we?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of questions on certain players, like we spoke about before, about Williams and Wyman, and players entering the last year of their contracts. Do you move them on, or do you keep them? The young players coming through, you don't want to sign too many players that necessarily block the pathways of the young players coming through the academy. But in the same respect, you know, injuries now have left us threadbare, haven't they? Really, and creativity-wise, I mean, we need experience out there. In the nicest possible way, we need experience out there. The Stoke game is, I mean, I don't think any of us today are actually expecting us to get a result up at Stoke, which is a shame because we've always done well. But, you know, we're drifting through the end of the season.
When we get
to, say, the Rotherham game or something it may be that we're mathematically okay or whatever.
I think we're safe now. But if you look at it, yeah. I mean, I put yesterday, and Dave Fevs corrected me when I said we would look at the QPR game and the Rotherham game as our best chance of getting 6 points from the final eight, because we've just talked about Stoke and Middlesbrough, but it doesn't get any easier after that, because it then goes Watford and Sheffield United away. Right. So based on current form, we could quite easily lose four in a row.
We'd look like a team at the moment that's running on adrenaline and not very much else.
Mm. Ian, what do you say? I mean, you've been saying the magic 50 points, that's first base, but, you know, it's a tough run of four games coming up before we play Rotherham, yeah? And well, on current form, you know.
Yeah. Well, there's four. If you look at a couple of things. Firstly, where we are in the table, and where we are in the table is we're 10 points clear with goal difference, effectively 11 points clear of Huddersfield. I think you can almost write off Blackpool and Wigan, who've got 34 and 35 points. I can't see them catching us. Huddersfield got 39 points. We've got 49 points and a much superior goal difference. So that's effectively 11 points clear. So they have to do 11 points better than us out of the next 21.
Hmm.
Now, that isn't impossible, but it does mean if we pick up 5 points, they'd have to pick up 16.
Not going to happen.
It does make it unlikely. Let's put it that way, on the balance of probability. In terms of our squad, I really challenge what Brian Tinian has said about the number of incoming players. I really challenge it, because if we lose, and it looks like we're going to lose Callas and De Silva, definitely De Silva, and let's say we sell Alex Scott, and I don't think that's a given at the kind of money that City are talking.
No.
Could it happen? Yeah. Is it a given? No. So, but let's say, just for the sake of argument, we lose those three. And we bring in 3 to 4, which is what Tinian said. If Scotty goes, we'll probably bring in 4 from League One or League Two. Tell me how those players are going to improve the squad next season.
Yeah.
It's, once again, on the balance of risk and probability, that is, I would say, virtually impossible. So what you're saying, if you say, oh, no, they'll improve the squad, unless they're very different players and we're going to play very differently from how we do now. So, for example, you say, well, no, we're going to go out and get 4 absolute giants and we're going to go direct and we're going to be a big physical side. But just say, then you could. There might be an explanation there. But how on earth do you sell... we'll call him a £25 million, £20 million player, an £8 million centre-half, and £2 million left-back, bring in lads from League One and League Two, and they're better. Now, somebody said to me, if we bring in a centre-half instead of Callas, at least he'll play. That's fair, but...
it's like having a player, but he's not going to get any better. And I think to go out and shop in League One, because you've got the £8 million for... let's say the Semenyo is the finance. Let's not get into the detail of FFP, but let's say the money for Semenyo is the financial correction that absolves us of any points deduction issues next season or whenever, right? You get 25 million, 20 million for Scott, right? 20 million. Let's not be over the top. I think it's a bit of a slap in the face for the fans to go out and replace a player like that with, as you've said, Ian, you know, League One and League Two, because they're not going to cost so much and they're not going to be on the same wages. And you look how much the wage bill is going to come down. I don't know what Scott's on at the moment, but if you look how much the wage bill is going to come down by Callas and De Silva coming off, and add that to the other players that have players that have already gone. Dan Bentley,
I can't see those players being as good as the ones that go out the door. So you then say, the question is, how do you then improve the squad? Because don't forget, you've only made it stronger. So if 3 go and 4 come in, you've made it deeper by 1 player. Now, players that have joined us out of League Two seem to take a whole season, and that normally involves them getting injured to get up to speed. Yeah. And the same thing happened with Andy King, who joined us after he'd hardly played any football for 18 months, 2 years.
Yeah.
So you get long-term injuries. We've seen it with Kane Wilson this season, and he was the best player, according to fans and whoever else.
Well, statistically, he was statistically the best player.
He was awarded. He was player of the season for all of League Two. Yeah. So he came in, did his knee.
No.
And Tanner, 2 hamstrings. King, 2 hamstrings.
No, well, the evidence is there. They're facts, Ian. They're facts. You know, they're absolute facts.
What I'm saying is we need to be very careful, and my squad number wouldn't be 23 as it is now. It would be 28.
I've heard you say it on Radio Brist as well, because we need to cover for an unusual... Let me give Tom and Mark a word on this, because we need to wrap up in a minute. Tom, if you look at before we know where we are, the season's going to be over, you know. And, you know, if we were to finish 3 points less than last season and maybe 2 places lower in the league, you know, it's when, as I said, when do the excuses stop? Because this is a watershed season now. The financial mess we got ourselves into is finally washed out come this summer. This is the reset time, isn't it? Yeah. What do you see happening?
I think we need to look. I'd give 8 weeks into the new season, and you want to see progression. You know, you want to see. I completely agree with Ian on the recruitment. If you're selling Scott for 20 million, and those are the figures we're talking about, you know, we're talking sort of like the Webster money, and that's going to be rare for us. Not, we're never going to have a player in the coming years go for 20 million, I expect, apart from Scott. So you want to see that money used wisely, and he needs to get it right. And Pearson, on the whole, has he got the transfers right? Yes, I'd say Atkinson was a good acquisition. I think Tanner's been good, but not all of them have been.
No, and Ian was saying about Kane Wilson. I mean, you know, I think you said, Neil, we missed Sykes yesterday. Okay, Tanner is holding down that right back berth, but why not play Kane Wilson for half an hour in that right wing slot? Yeah, that offensive player wide on the right, because he's been a bitter disappointment, and there always seem to be these little undercurrents of he's not quite there yet. Well, what do you make of that? That's it supports Ian's view of players physically not being up to it. But, you know, we expected a lot more from Kane Wilson, but he's not seemed to get his he's not getting a look in, is he?
Is that to me?
To you still, yeah.
The thing with Kane Wilson is, you listen to Pearson speak about Kane Wilson, and the one thing he highlights is his fitness. Well, he's not quite there yet. He's not fit enough. He's not. And it's a lot of, you know, he's on the bench a lot. He's not playing for the under 20. He is and isn't playing for the under 21. So maybe he gets 60 minutes. But what's that going to do? He needs championship football. If we've brought him in and we're just playing him and he's under 21 for 60 minutes, that's not going to develop him as a player.
No.
I mean, we saw him at Hull. I remember going right back to the start of the season. And he came on and he was poor. And he threw his hands up, you know, saying sorry to all his teammates. And he got injured, and he's not.
Well, he was puffing, wasn't he, before he got injured?
He was puffing big time. But if we're saying about his fitness, he's got to come on maybe 20 minutes at the end. Yeah. You don't need good fitness to last 20 minutes, particularly. No.
What do you say to my view that he could have played 20 minutes yesterday in an offensive? Ignore your defensive responsibilities. Mm. You're a crosser. You know, all your assists last season came from crosses.
But I mean,
go on, Tom, finish your sentence.
I watched a few of the preseason games this season, and the thing that I highlighted about Kane Wilson is his fantastic crossing ability. We got lots of goals in preseason, particularly, you know, when Martin was there and when we had Semenyo, from Kane Wilson in advanced positions, crossing it into the box. I know it's only pre-season, but it's clear that there's some ability to cross the ball. Yeah. And it would be good to see him in a right-wing position. Right.
Mark, what do you agree with my view that there seems there's something not right about the Kane Wilson situation? And do you think he could have been tried in the absence of Sykes? Say, right, you know, you haven't got to worry about your defending, but give us some crossing, which was poor yesterday on every level. What do you say, Mark?
Well, I don't see why not. Direct runner, he did a couple of direct runs against Swansea to get crosses in, you know, in the knock-ins of the game a couple of Sundays ago. And we missed that because we certainly weren't getting it on the left-hand side of the pitch with the silver in tandem with Anis Mometi. So yeah, it would have been another weapon to unleash. I mean, just for 10 minutes, he would have had the fitness to be able to deal with that, to run at their defenders and just stretch them. Just didn't do that. But we're left in this situation by Mark Sykes' rank stupidity against Swansea. I mean, we've got enough to worry about with all these injuries. But we haven't mentioned it. But that, you know, the challenge against Swansea on the player who didn't even foul him, he kicked Ryan Manning. Not
well, he did a David Beckham. I mean, Neil, just I'm just going to finish with you on this one. Kane Wilson conundrum and sticking on the Sykes situation. okay, retrospective four-match ban and what have you, but we want to see these things apply consistently. So your view on just on that?
Well, which part?
The Kane Wilson and
Kane Wilson. I think if he doesn't start getting some game time at the start of next season, I can see him go.
Because he looked a bit pissed off running
I just think he's going to be a 22, 23-year-old player and he's going to say, am I going to get a chance at this club? And if he's not going to get a chance at this club, then I think he's not going to hang around and want to play under 21 football and want to sit on a bench and everything. I don't understand why he's not giving him a run out in a right midfield position. Realistically, I mean, we're not getting anything from Vyman out there at the moment, I would argue. And I don't know why he's not getting the chances, but Pearson is very much, if you haven't got his confidence, look at the Duncan Idahen situation yesterday.
Captain of the under-21, possibly the
most
on the bench.
Possibly the most aerially dominant centre-back he's got available to him, and yet he doesn't even have him on the bench. He puts youngsters on the bench. So I think you're either in his good books or you're not at the end of the day. The second point's over Sykes. Yeah, I mean, as I said at the start, we missed him yesterday. Those runs that he was making against Birmingham, that golden patch of those runs into the box, the amount of times we got behind him on both sides would have made a difference yesterday. He would have made, and as Marcus said, it's rank stupidity. But he's got a little bit about that about his game, hasn't he?
Yeah, which is...
So, something about the Northern Irish, like with James McLean and Mark Sykes, they've got that little bit of fire. There's
a little bit about that fire that we need as a team. Ian, just to finish with you on this point, the Sykes ban, losing him for four games is a bit of a blow. And when you look at it, it looks bad. We want to see consistent application of that type of rule, though, retrospective, because we've had a couple of situations, haven't we, where stuff's been done to us and the punishment, you know, people say, oh, the FA or whatever it is, have got something against us. But, you know, Sykes was stupid there when you've got cameras all around the ground these days, wasn't he?
Well, he was, but in the same way that the Wigan player was stupid up there first game of the season when he kicked Joe Williams and he didn't even get, there was no retrospective action and I don't think he even got booked. So I can understand Pearson's frustration with that and saying, well, okay, if the rules applied equally and he's sending the Referees Association and the EFL all the evidence to back it up. So I totally agree with that. Going back to Kane Wilson, why not bring Kane Wilson? If you're going up to Stoke, why not freshen it up by giving Kane Wilson that wide right berth in front of George Tanner? Should make you a bit more secure defensively. And let's see what the bloke can do. Look,
I agree.
He's out there for 20 minutes and he's having a stinker, then you can drag him off.
Yeah. Yeah. But we've got seven games to go where let's give him a run. Give him a run.
Well, you give him some minutes, certainly. I mean, you can, even if he can last the first 45 minutes and set up two goals with really good crosses, that'll do for me.
Job done. All right, gentlemen. And listeners, thanks for everybody who's come in. I can see the number of people listening has gone up because they probably thought we were doing it at 10 o'clock. But we had at 9.30, we had a 9.30 start today. And, it's been, I think, a lively discussion on a whole level of fronts. But thanks to the listeners for joining in and your comments on the text feed. And Mark, Ian, Tom and Neil, thanks for your contribution. I'll say happy Easter now, but we'll be reviewing Stoke on Saturday morning, I would think, or maybe Friday afternoon. I don't know yet, but we'll be posting that. And good luck to the new podcast that's been launched. It was being promoted on Radio Bristol called One for the Bristol City. Quite a good name on there, but with fans' views and interviews and goodness knows what else. New episode from them every Tuesday. So a new podcast out there, along with ourselves, Three Peeps, and OSIB as well.
Can I just mention something that happened Ian and I came across yesterday in the Supporters Club bar after the game. We were approached by Neil Palmer, the former Players Association, and they've been given by a fan the shirt, Tom Rich's shirt, that he hurled into the away end at Coventry in May 1977.
Oh, I saw that.
So the fan gave it back to Tom, who was in tears. One of these 100% nylon shirt to remember. God knows how they wore those in hot weather.
Fair play for that person for handing that back in.
Yeah.
No, thanks for dropping that in, Mark. That was a useful comment after my wind-up for once. Can I just say? But everybody, thanks for listening, and have a good week. And we'll speak to you all again soon. All of you.
Have a lovely Easter, everyone. All of you, take care.
Well done, everybody.
Bye-bye.
Load them all
away.
What if I've been unlucky? Really, I ain't got a thing. There's a time I always feel happy as a king. When the red robin comes bobbing along, along. There'll be no more sobbing when he stops throbbing his old sweet song. Oh, wake up, you sleepyhead. Get up, get out of bed. Cheer up, the sun is red. Live, love, laugh and be happy. What if I've been blue? Now I'm walking through fields of flowers. Rain may glisten, but still I listen for hours and hours. I'm just a kid again, doing what I did again, singing a song. When red robins are bobbing along. When the red robin comes bobbing along, along. There'll be no more sobbing when he starts robbing his old sweet song. Oh, wake up, you sleepyhead. Get up, get out of bed. Cheer up, the sun is red. Live, love, laugh and be happy. What if I've been blue? Now I'm walking through fields of flowers. Rain may glisten, but still I listen for hours and hours. I'm just a kid again, doing what I did again, singing a song. When the red robin starts bobbing along.